The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
And Nick is not on the schedule today, so he is at home. And Aaron Raybould's picking up where Dell left off, and he'll take us home for the next 2 hours before his show starts on the Blitz, as Barry and I are rolling through a Monday in the big city. Hope you all are well, staying safe, practicing social distancing, and all of that. I guess, Barry, because we got into some other things, but I would like to get into the doc a little bit, the Last Dance from last night. I was going to say initial takeaways. Aaron, did you watch it?
I did not.
Wow, you and Barry both. Okay.
I'll watch it eventually.
He's not and we into are, it or what?
I am. I just don't know. I don't know how much time I want to commit to it right now. Like, I was having fun at home yesterday, so I was just like, eh. I mean, I'll watch it probably one of these days while my wife's at work or something like that, but it's not something I have to see, because I remember, I feel like it might taint some of my childhood memories, because I was such a big fan back then.
I'll say this. Okay. There are some eye-openers. Scottie Pippen, Michael was worried before the documentary came out that he was going to look like a bad guy and people weren't going to like him as much. So far, I don't think I see that. I just think it really highlights his competitive fire. But Scottie, because episode 2 was basically Pippen. Episode 3 coming up is going to be centered around Rodman. But Pippen comes out not in the best of light in a lot of ways because of the fact that he could have had surgery at the end of the 97 season. And he basically said, F it. Because they were underpaying him. Because, look, and that was back in the day when he made a deal that he said to take care of his family. He signed a 7-year deal, which averaged a little bit over $2 million a year, which made him the 6th highest paid Bull in 98 and the 120-somethingest highest paid player in the league when he was top 5 in the league. And so he had the red ass. So he needed surgery, and he said, I'm not going to F up my summer. I'm going to wait till the season starts. And Michael made, which is now a very controversial statement on the internet because of the way it came across in the document, but he said, Scotty, you know, let us down. And it was disappointing that, and you know, he shouldn't have handled that way. And I think it goes back to like the Baker Mayfield thing where you just don't comment on another man's money. And so those kind of situations are best left to just that player and management when things like that go down.
Well, I think you're right, but, you know, Jordan, it's his team. It's his, you know, if anyone's going to comment on it, it's going to be him, and it's in hindsight, and you don't know. I'm sure that they talked about it, and I'm sure he never wavered from his stance, and I'm sure he told Pippen about it, because we all know Jordan didn't mind telling people what he thought, and so I'm sure he let Scotty know, hey, look, I don't appreciate that, but at the same time, Scotty signed the deal. If you didn't
yeah, but
like
Barry,
the money, why
easy
you
enough
the deal?
To be said if you're Jordan making 30 mil a year that year and you're trying to tell a guy that's maybe the second or third best player in the league at that time, you know what? Just suck it up for the 2.8 and you know what? And play because we need you. That's a
yeah, but
deal,
the, you, no one made you sign that deal, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But at the same time,
nobody held a gun to his head and said, be the 125th or whatever, the highest paid player in the NBA. He could have held out. He could have, you know, went somewhere else.
Well, and
no
Jerry
one
Reinsdorf
forced him to sign the deal.
The owner of the Bulls, Jerry Reinsdorf, said, look, I told Michael and Scotty both not to sign the deals that they signed when they signed the long term deals. But Scotty himself said, I had to take care of my family and I couldn't risk getting hurt on a short term deal. But I think that what Scotty always anticipated was if I show my worth to be more than what my contract is, in good faith, I would assume the team's going to renegotiate. Whereas Reinsdorf said, once they sign the name on the dotted line, I'm done. We're not talking about it again until the contract is up. And that's just the way he did business. And that was a harsh pill to swallow for Scottie Pippen.
No. I mean, that was his mistake. That was his bad, you know. I don't feel sorry for the man, and I know his wife had to come out and be like, oh, he made $100 million over his career, and he did a sign-and-trade with
his
Chicago. His ex-wife, yeah, and it was like $67 million that he got in the sign-and-trade to Houston with Chicago.
He got like 11 a year. Yeah, he got 11 a year in that deal at least.
Think about that. Think about that. He's known as a bull, but $67 million of his $101 million he made in his career came from being a Rocket.
Well, and then when he was the Rocket
first deal, but he got
part
traded.
Of the deal was traded to Portland, yeah.
But it didn't come from being a bull. You know what I mean? It came from him becoming a Rocket. So that's pretty crazy.
I think one of the things that I took away was I knew that they called Jerry Krause Crumbs because he always had food on his front of his clothing, and I knew that they picked on him a lot. But he single-handedly is responsible for a dynasty being cut possibly short or abruptly ending. And I don't agree with that. But on the flip side, I'll say the moves he made that he doesn't get enough credit for, the guys in the Hall of Fame, he made more savvy moves as a general manager. But yet because he's single-handedly responsible for the breakup of the Bulls, he's hated across Chicago, and maybe farther than that.
That surprises me a little bit because of, you know, I mean, he went back to Chicago his last 2 years, and I didn't know that he was that hated. I had no idea, so.
Well, I mean, and the other thing was in the documentary last night, they said Pippen took it so personally because then he tried to trade Pippen before the trade deadline and then just didn't pull the trigger, that they said, you know, Pippen didn't have any lines that couldn't be crossed. In the bus, he was yelling things from the back of the bus, just killing him. You know, Phil finally said that they had to kind of sit him down and go, hey, man, slow down a little bit. But, you know, that he was very much, you could tell. I mean, he was one of those, they said he had little man syndrome. But his big thing was he hated the fact that the players got all the credit, which they should, the players and Phil. But he wanted to get the credit for all that he did as the architect of all of this. And it got in the way of what could have been a dynasty that maybe they won a couple more times.
I don't think they win more than six. Do you?
Oh, I think there was a legitimate. I mean, look, as long as you had Michael and Michael was still playing at that level, I think that you always had a chance. And I think that, you know, Scotty found out that Scotty trying to be Batman didn't work out so well. But Scotty was one of the best Robins of all time as the number two guy. And once you have those two go-to guys, that's what we're seeing in the NBA right now. I mean, if you've got two, you got a chance. And then just depending on what kind of complementary pieces you put around those two can be the difference between, you know, winning and or, you know, not doing very well in the playoffs. But I think that just as long as you had that nucleus and you had a guy like Krause that could still be the architect. But the creepier thing was the fact that while Phil was still coaching the team, even after Krause said, look, you can go 82-0 and you're not going to be my coach next year, you're done, he had been courting Tim Floyd and had him around the team while Phil was still coaching the team. That, to me,
that's
just
crazy.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, big time.
So that was one of my takeaways was that Crumbs was – you know, as much as you want to hate on him, and he really had to, you know, he probably should have handled things differently. But, boy, the moves he made to be savvy enough to trade Olden Polonese and the rights to a couple of draft picks to move up to get a guy named Scottie Pippen out of an NAIA school, and the way that turned out and some of his other moves, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, pretty pretty interesting the dynamics that surround, because you everything, which is I think to your point about what the documentary really is, because everything seems so great, but now we're going to get a little bit of the dirty details. Like, I really found it interesting that the whole story about the hotel room with the coke and the blow and the strippers,
yep,
and all that, Jordan walks away from it because he didn't want to be involved with it. He thought they could get busted, and he was kind of isolated after that until the season started, or I guess once the season started, then they realized. But that's the kind of stuff you tune in for. I mean, if there's – now, I will say this. There was the questions about Pippen's money right, based on the second episode.
Yep, yep.
Did you see the story on Bro Bible that dropped about 4 hours ago? I'll just read you the headline, and then we can discuss. But Michael Jordan was reportedly jealous because Madonna chose the more well-endowed Scottie Pippen over him.
What?
Yeah,
I thought she chose Dennis Rodman.
Well, I guess she chose both, but according to the Basketball Network, basketballnetwork.net, there was one other area that Pippen had Michael bested, and that was the size of his equipment down below. Bulls assistant coach Johnny Bock said, that killed Michael. You should have seen the girls Pippen had waiting for him everywhere he went. According to Bock, whenever the Bulls were in L.A., Madonna would pick up Scotty in a limo complete with a hot tub. Michael clearly did not like how Pippen got to spend quality time with the most famous woman on earth. And used to tell Madonna he could satisfy her better than Pippen, to which Madonna apparently replied, not a chance. Hilarious.
Really?
Yeah.
Madonna making her way through two-fifths of the starting lineup of the Bulls.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah. Apparently he's, just walking around.
What episode is that going to be in? So there's some information I didn't know. And I will say this. The other thing that bothered me more than anything else, and you might be able to tell me when you see the first two, You're led to believe it's all about the 97-98 season. And then it just bounces around. Like, they go through Michael's early years. They go through the Carolina years. Then they go back to 98. And I just wish they'd either do it, in chronological fashion or just stick to the one season, because the bouncing around kind of – it loses momentum when you're kind of into a certain part of the documentary.
Well, I tell you what, I will, on the other side of this break, I will tell the people how they can watch it tonight if they missed it, because I have found it, and it's not on Netflix, so I have all the info.
There you go. So that's coming up next, as well as a whole lot more. If you want to join the show, 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, hit us on Twitter. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's all in my mind. Why can't I
seem to let go? More talk, less commercials. Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
We are here for you. La, 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 la.
You're listening to Late Hits. You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sciarra.
Welcome back to the afternoon edition. Late Hits. I'm Patrick Creighton, along with Barry Laminack. We're best friends. We're going to be talking for the next couple hours. The man said it was Late Hits. I'm here. Let's do this.
I mean, yeah. That's my best Braddock.
Jay, the draft is coming up Thursday. I'm worried about my Giants. What do you know about the Texans?
I think I don't know how to do a Jason Braddock, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm.
Damn it.
I'm not gonna.
I wish I could, but I told Aaron. I was like, "What the hell was that?" He goes, "Keeping you on your toes." I said, "That was very disrespectful. Don't ever do that again."
Okay. All right, so you've got information on how people can see what they've missed.
Yes. All right, all you got to do, thanks to Del Olale, by the way, because he's the one that hipped me to it. He said, see if it's on ESPN3. You don't need ESPN Plus. You can just go to ESPN3, which I did, and then it took me actually to ESPN.com Watch, which you can go back and watch live on the interwebs. As it happens, like, I could literally, when we get done with this show at 4 o'clock, I'm going to watch both episodes of The Last Dance and be ready tomorrow to be like, oh my God, what happened here? So it's out there right now if you want. Of course, wait till The Usual Suspects are over.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, just go to ESPN3 and click on Watch. Well, actually, hold on. ESPN3. Now, you do have to log in with your cable provider. But once you do that, you're good to go.
Cool.
So
there you go.
Googled,
you're going to enjoy
ESPN.
It.
Yep, I Googled ESPN3. It took me to Watch ESPN, and I clicked on Watch, and I clicked on it's right there on the front page. It just says Watch The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2 streaming now. So super easy.
So I look forward to your review tomorrow.
Yes.
Tracy McGrady is out on the jump right now, by the way, pointing out that he was nearly traded to Chicago in 97 in one of the deals that Jerry Krause was exploring. He was nearly traded for Scottie Pippen and that MJ vetoed the trade.
That's interesting. Do you think that that was because he loved Pippen or he didn't? He was worried that he may end up being second fiddle to Tracy McGrady. Now, I know Jordan didn't think he would be second fiddle to anybody ever. But
and again, you've got to see the documentary.
He would never admit to it either.
You got to see the first two so that you can – it gave me a new perspective on what Michael thought of Scotty. Because although he is critical of the fact that Scotty hurt the team by making it about his money and his contract and when he got the surgery and all these other things – you know, for a guy like Michael Jordan, who on his own can stand alone against anybody, to say that if you mention Michael Jordan, you should always mention Scottie Pippen, too, and that he was the best teammate that he ever had. I think that regardless of anything else, what I took away from it is these guys were like super, super tight, more so than people maybe even realized. And so I would think that Michael is a loyal guy. They won together. He also knew what he could expect out of a guy like Scotty, and a guy like T-Mac was trying to make a name for himself by scoring a lot and maybe trying to do it all. And I would think that from MJ's perspective, it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Same reason why I don't want Phil to go anywhere. Why would I want Scotty to go anywhere when this team has proven that they have chemistry and they know their roles and they know how to get it done?
I still say there was probably and I don't think he would ever admit to it, but I bet you he didn't want to compete with the hype that was surrounding Tracy McGrady.
The other thing that we didn't talk about was defense. Tracy didn't play any and Michael knew that Michael was a defender, but he knew Scotty, whoever he put the clamps on, was going to have a rough night.
True. But, man, dude, the hype around McGrady, I don't know. I would be willing to bet that there was something there.
But you don't think from Michael's perspective, I don't want to groom a kid that might take a few years to really get it all and put it all together when I already got a guy that's proven to win with me, come up big in big moments, that I don't have to do anything except for get out of his way?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously something to that, but I would be willing to bet you if you made him sit down and he didn't think anybody would see it, and you drew a line down the center of a piece of paper and put the pros and cons of that scenario, there would be something to the fact that it may take a small portion of shine off of his star. As a celebrity, as the man, as the main guy. Because also you got to remember, Scotty knew his role. Scotty knew he was Robin. He didn't want to be Batman. He didn't want to score all the time. And so that might have had something to do with it. And I'm not just because it's Tracy, because that could have been the same thing the year before if they were in, you know, or could have traded for Kobe. I would be willing to bet you that he wouldn't have wanted to have to compete with him on the same team that way.
Well, and I think it's fair to say that you don't know what these guys would have become. There was no way of knowing Kobe Bryant was going to end up being who he became, or Tracy McGrady for that matter. But I think that that's the thing. Michael was one of those guys that was going to go with the more definitive, sure thing that he could bet on, and he could bet on Scotty being there, having his back, and doing whatever was necessary for them to be successful, whereas there were too many question marks and variables about – you know, the other two guys in terms of what their age was, how they, you know, they didn't know the NBA yet, playoff experience, et cetera, et cetera. So I would throw that out there.
Okay. Yeah.
I will say the other thing is because, of course, this has rejuvenated the whole discussion about greatest player of all time and all these other things. One thing that I didn't realize is I forgot about Michael's broken foot and the fact that it cost him almost a full season, 64-plus games. Because then he was on a minutes restriction. Those games really, he was playing 14 minutes a game. You think about that and 2 years of baseball and think about where his overall career scoring numbers and all these other things would have been, man. I think just statistically, his numbers would be way up if you added three more full years of Michael Jordan.
Oh, man. Could you imagine?
Wow. Hey,
yeah. You think about all the greatness that he had, and we were basically deprived of 3 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm not getting into the whole Rockets debate. Look, because I'm one of those people that firmly believe the Rockets always played the Bulls well, and the Thirsty Rockets Twitter account went out and did a whole video on it as if I wouldn't go that far, people. To
what
go
do you mean,
and
did
say
a whole video on it?
Oh, they did a whole video on how they would have dominated and beaten the Bulls and done all these things.
Oh, then
you don't. Yeah.
Yeah,
whoever's doing that over there, you weren't even there when all that was going on. But I do think the Rockets would have beat them. But I think that overall, to say that you take 3 years away from Michael's career and then you want to compare just analytics on numbers, I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, but I would agree with that.
I don't know if we have the audio for it or not, but
did they do a video about taking Dream instead of Jordan?
No, but Portland, when I was with the Blazers, let me tell you, the one topic that would never, ever, ever go away was you took Sam Bowie and his multiple broken legs over Michael.
Yeah, I mean, the Dream thing we've talked about, it's not that big of a deal. I think people liked him. Oh, you had a chance to get Jordan. Well, but you got a large one. It's not like Portland where you had a chance to get Jordan and you got Sam Bowie.
And it was a big man's league at the time, and to have that big man coming out of college with his resume,
and to make the Twin Tower. But could you imagine if you would have had Jordan and Sampson for a while?
Well, and here, but here's the other thing: if you're Portland, they said the reason why they didn't do it is because they already had Clyde. Can you imagine MJ and Clyde on the same fast breaks?
Oh my God.
You talk about what basketball is today with a guard-oriented offense. Try and stop that. I don't care how many seven-footers you got.
There'd be no better duo in the history of the sport.
It'd be crazy.
Yeah.
All right, we got plenty more to get to. And if you guys want to join us, we'd love to have you. 713-780-3776. It is the HR&P Lister line. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We are the Usual Suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. No sleep till. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
90 in the books, 90 still to go. Here comes the second half of the Suspect Show. It's Barry, myself, and Aaron Rabold on a Monday in the big city. Sun is now shining. Hopefully the rain and crappy weather is behind us. And now I believe it's mid to high 80s all week, Barry. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
A lot of reports of hail.
I didn't close
the
tab yet. Okay. I didn't close the tab yet, but boy, this 84 draft was loaded.
It was a good one.
Maybe the best NBA draft of all time, and I know we've done this debate where we pulled them all up. Mm. But, dude, when you just look at it, you just peruse this, and you go Olajuwon, Jordan, Barkley – you had OT, which from Houston perspective, Otis
drafted Orton by Sacramento,
Houston,
right?
Kevin Willis, the Kings, yeah, Kansas City at the time. Yeah.
Was it still Kansas City back
Kings,
then?
But
wow,
yes, it was not the it wasn't Sacramento,
not the Sacramento. Okay.
You had Stockton in this draft. Like, dude, it's just absolutely.
I mean, the one that everybody's going to argue is
was in the first
LeBron, Carmelo, D. Wade in the top, three of the top four picks.
I'll take this draft every time. You've got the greatest. I mean, you've got. So if you think about, you got the LeBron draft versus the Jordan draft, because everybody loves to compare those two.
Yep.
But if Olajuwon is the second best player in that draft, and then Barkley's the third. You're not beating that. And like I said, you got Stockton. You got
Stockton,
Kevin Willis,
yeah.
Otis Thorpe. It's crazy, dude. You got four of probably, the 100 best players of all time just in this one draft.
I just think that when we talk about competitive juices and fire, one of the things, the other things I took away from the doc was just simply the fact that people thought Michael was a bad guy because in practice he wasn't afraid to call anybody out on anything. I think it's a beautiful trait that not enough players have these days because it wasn't personal. It was about winning. And the fact that he wanted to win at all costs in everything that he did, I don't think that makes you a bad person. I think if you saw some of the feedback from a lot of the current NBA players that were watching, they were like, this dude is just second to none, the GOAT. And, you know, the thing that you and I have talked about is it's different eras. It's a different way to play. But if you could, if you couldn't touch Michael Jordan with all the different ways he could beat you, and you know, and you're the stat guy here on our show, but the one thing that they touched on was if you talk about everything that he did on the basketball floor, and you make the comparison to a five-tool player in baseball, the one thing, the only one thing you could poke a hole at Jordan on was three-point shooting because he shot 33%. But you don't think if he knew that in today's game the three was so prevalent that he didn't, he wouldn't have just worked on it a little bit and could have raised that percentage up? If that's Gary Payton and Jason Kidd came into the NBA without a jump shot and became all time on the 3-point made shooting list, if they can do it, you don't think MJ would have improved his 3-point shooting?
No doubt. No doubt about it. But he shot 32.7% for his career. That's not awful. I mean, he wasn't
not awful at all. But the what, you know, to the point that we made last
his
week,
the problem was his first 4 years. You can tell he worked on it though, cuz check this out. Here's his 3-point percentage for the first 5 years in the league. You ready?
Yeah.
17.3, 16.7, 18.2, 13.2. And then in 88, 89, it jumps to 27.6. Then he shoots 37.6, 31.2. There's a 35 mixed in. So, like, he realized 4 years in, man, I need to be better at this. This is my weakness. You know, because he prided himself on defense.
Three
times in his career.
I was in the stadium against Portland in the finals when he made, what, 6 threes in the first half. You don't do that if you're not a good shooter. You know, he could train himself. And the other thing is they look at the attempts these days. Like, Curry was like 880 attempts in a season. I think the most threes Michael ever attempted in one season was less than 300. It was like 280. So I that's why I think, you know, and I don't like getting into the, you know, when we get into, like, comparing eras and all this other stuff. I just don't know when you look at – I mean, this guy would punch his own teammates at practice. And Aaron's got a quote. They caught up with Steve Kerr because they talked about it. Because a lot of people's like, one thing you never do is you never go at your own team. But Steve Kerr had some great insight on the fact that the players didn't take it as a negative. They took it as a positive.
I knew I had to stand up for myself, and I think that looking back, and even at the time, I could see what he was doing. You know, Michael wanted to make sure everybody who was out there could deal with the pressure of a playoff game, and if you couldn't deal with his trash talk during practice, then he didn't think you were going to stand up to the pressure during a playoff game.
Wow.
And I think he's right. And I think also, Barry, you would have fit in really well back in that era because, you know, having been around Charles as much as I was, I've played golf with MJ, and I've been around him enough at casinos and other things to realize that what was acceptable back then would never fly today. But nothing was off limits. I mean, he would talk to Jerry Krause about his weight, about diet pills, about, you know, his height. I mean, and just anybody that came, you know, near them, nothing was off limits. I mean, you give me a hard time, and we talk all the time about fat shaming and all those other things. MJ, I mean, if he saw an opening that was the size of a pinhole, he was going to blow that thing up to the size of a sewer hole in about 3 seconds. I mean, that was acceptable back then, and you were accepted by him if he was going to give the way you explained AJ to me is the way MJ was with a lot of people too. If he was giving you crap like that, he liked you.
Yep.
But you got to be able to take it.
Yeah, that was the other thing, and that can prove to be easier said than done, no doubt.
Yeah. So I'm interested to hear your feedback after you see it tonight.
Well, I'll watch it today or tonight, and I will be ready with my full book report in the morning. Bad news, though, on the economy front, just to switch gears a little bit.
Yep, yep.
Oil is plummeting. Somebody texted the show at about 145 and said it was minus $40 a barrel. That is not good.
It's been down for a while. Yeah, when you look
well,
at
it
gas prices,
I hadn't seen it be negative. I hadn't seen the price per barrel be negative until now. And, oh, boy. And you know what? It's going to be bad, but it's going to affect Houston really
big
bad.
Time.
Like, yeah, get ready
were
because
tweeting pictures of going to the pump and paying less than $1.50 a gallon.
I remember when I was at Halliburton and then I got laid off because of the last oil bust not too long ago, about 6 years ago, I think, or whenever it was, maybe 4 years ago or whatever, when they were struggling. And I remember telling people, you know what? I know you guys like paying low prices for oil, and I know that the rest of the country is rooting for it. But if you live in Houston, Texas, you better be rooting for the fact that oil is expensive and so is gas, because it's one of the main lifebloods of the economy in this city.
Sure.
And you know, I know people are like, yeah, but I don't. I mean, that's great if you work for an oil company. No, because all the people that work for oil companies go out and spend money, and that's how an economy works. So if you work in the service industry or you work in any other industry, a lot of the people that are employed here right now that had the money from their jobs working in oil are the ones that, you know, helped with the economy. So it could have a ripple effect big time to go along with the coronavirus. And they're saying it's because nobody's driving. And then apparently Russia and Saudi Arabia were in a price war and flooding the market with oil. And it's caused it to spiral out of control. So pretty bad news and grim news for the Houston economy for sure.
Well, you and I can relate to the fact that I'm basically filling up every 2 weeks, if that, as opposed to at least once, if not twice a week when we were going to the station.
And I just filled up for the first time since all this started, since we started working from the house, literally. I mean, I get one day a week I get out and drive now.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It
sucks.
It really does. There's you know, two sides to every story, and I don't think the people nationwide realize they're just loving the low gas prices. That they don't realize what that means, like you said, to Texas and to Houston in general. Mm-hmm. So something to keep an eye on there as well. All right, we're going to continue to roll through. Hour two is almost gone, but we still got a full hour after that as well. So we'd love to hear from you. 713-780-3776. You can call or text the HR&P Lister line, or you can hit us on Twitter. It's the usual suspects. Back with a whole lot more on ESPN 97.5.
Beautiful with dark hair and soft skin forever.
You gonna answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sharara.
Hey, rolling through the final segment of hour number two. It is The Usual Suspects. Barry, Joel, Aaron Raybould on a Monday in the big city. If you missed anything so far, catching up and covering a lot of ground, including a great conversation that Barry and Nick had on Barry's YouTube channel. It was live on Friday night, but you can go back and catch it. It was good stuff. Nick was fantastic. He said, I complimented him, and he said that he was, shall I say, feeling no pain at certain points, but did a nice job.
Yes, he had he fixed his glaucoma live on.
I told you. I told you you needed three of your rum and whatever, or crown and whatever's, just to be ready for the start of the show.
Yeah, you were right. You were absolutely right. It was and he was drinking Glenlivet, and I was drinking Crown, and I was trying to keep up. And it got a little wild. It was fun, though. Somebody texted the show and said, or Eric in Jersey Village said, why should I feel sorry for people in the oil and gas industry making six or seven figures annually while I live paycheck to paycheck? They need to manage their money better. Well, first of all, not everybody makes six or seven figures annually that works right in oil and gas. You got to remember that there's plenty of people that don't. It's not about that. It's about at the end of the day, I don't know what you do, Eric, in Jersey Village, but I can tell you that it's about more about the Houston economy and not about an individual paycheck in the oil and gas business. And that's how the economy works. If there's no money to spend, there's no economy. So if people which oil and gas is one of the biggest employers in our city, and if that suffers, so goes the jobs, so goes the economy. And then foreclosures, and then it just becomes an absolute nightmare for this city. So if you love our city and you love our economy, you better be rooting hard for oil and gas to rebound and for those people that you hate so much that are making six or seven figures to get their jobs back.
Well said. I agree.
Yep. So somebody texted the show with a picture of a John Deere. Said, let's get it, Barry. I think that's Seraphim, but he's like, let's get it, Barry. Another one out to deliver. We need to get you one. Well, send me one. I'm ready. What are you talking about? Oh, you want me to buy it? Bro, I ain't got John Deere tractor money. I'm trying to get a new seat for my lawnmower. Are you crazy? And I don't know what that's going to cost me.
It looks sexy. If they're offering, oh, you're taking, Joel, but yeah, it's different.
My pants are down.
Damn thing. Oh, boy.
Man, this thing looks sexy, but I can't afford one of them big ass tractors. I do love my X300 though. I'm not gonna lie. We need to, Seraphim, you need to tell your people to call my people. Let's do this. Let's get some ads going. Tell the people what's up on the John Deere.
Without question.
Let's do it.
Oh
man, I love mine. I got to get a new seat, but I'm telling you, it's like I told you, Joel. You don't know the amount of peace and tranquility. Shut your mouth. That you don't know the joy that you can get from just getting on a riding lawnmower, and you just
Barry. I don't have a yard like yours that needs a riding mower. I don't mind pushing a push mower.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, I cut plenty of lawns in my day. I don't have a massive green space.
I know. But you can still get a small. You don't even have to get like the X300 that I got. They have smaller ones. But man, to just get on there and drive around, and you know, if you're a drinker, you get you a little beer, and if you're not, it don't matter, because just put your headphones in, listen to a podcast, don't listen to anything, don't talk to anybody. It's mm-hmm. so therapeutic, man. I'm telling you, it's the best. One day when it all gets to be too much, Joel, you can come over here and mow my yard. I'll just let you get on the riding lawnmower and do your thing. You don't have to weed eat, you don't have to sweep, you don't have to, you know, blow the driveway. Notice I said driveway.
Oh boy. Yeah.
You just come over, I'll let you mow, and you'll feel like a new man, I promise.
Dude, I've cut plenty of lawn in my day, and I understand the therapy of it. I don't think there's any disputing that. It's just that from a time standpoint alone, I'm trying to find enough time in the day with everything I got going on with the family. And oh, by the way, on that note, I thought of you this weekend and almost thought for a quick second, you know what? Power to Barry for being a cat guy. The Camry is at it again. Oh, my God, man. I'm in the yard minding my own business, and the dog that I have, Sophie, female boxer pit mix, love her to death, but she's cost me more than a Camry in terms of all the surgeries we've had for her. She's the one that tore the ACL about a year and a half ago.
Oh,
I wasn't
no.
even home. I got home, everything seemed right. I walked the dogs, everything seemed right. And all of a sudden, I think it was Friday night, I started putting the food out for the dogs, and Sophie ain't putting any pressure on her back leg. And I was like,
Oh no.
And normally when that happens, she's just one of those dogs that's kind of creaky. She's only three, but you know, she acts like she's 103. I was like, well, that'll, you know, I've had this happen before where I get a pit in my stomach and the next day you wake up and she's good. Yet here we are on Friday, Saturday, 4, and it ain't looking good. It looks like when the doctors told us when she had the first ACL done, you know, there's a 70% chance she'll tear the other one. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but boy, oh boy, am I dreading that I'm right.
Man, that sucks, dude. That sucks for you and the dog.
Oh, no doubt. Now, she's not in any pain. Because literally when the other dogs go flying outside, if they see a squirrel or whatever like that, she goes flying with them. And then the minute she's done, she realizes, oh, hey, I don't know that my leg feels so good. But, like, I've literally, like, poked and prodded and tried to figure out. And she doesn't wince. She doesn't get upset. She doesn't, like, bite my hand or anything. So I don't know, man. I'm hoping that maybe it's something else and something not as expensive. But, yeah, I got a feeling that we're going to have a expensive vet bill coming.
Oh, that sucks, dude. Somebody had a question for you on the text line.
Okay.
They said, Joel, what was your handicap before kids? I'm like a 20-plus, so I'm not trying to talk bleep. I'm just curious how much worse can I get after I have kids?
A lot worse. It's coming, and it's going to come in steady doses. I was a 5.
Oh, my God. First of all, that's amazing that you were a 5 handicap.
Yeah, I still get
to show up and swing it the way you swing it, and just get absolutely annihilated by me.
Okay, that didn't happen. But the swing was awful, and I'll tell you,
how much it means to be able to get
out there. Muscle memory and everything else. Yeah, I still get the email that says, "Hey, Joel, here's your latest handicap card," and it's like a 5, and I'm going, "God, those were the days." When I played 5 times a week, and you know, in the summertime, and we'd play at night until it got dark out, and just all, you know, just enjoyed swinging the club. Now I look at it, and again, I always say to Lisa, golf looks like a sport I'd like to try sometime. And then she just starts scowling at me. I'm like, look, I'm just kidding. I mean, I know I've got a great life and a great family, but yeah, there are days and times that I sure do miss playing golf.
Well, why can't you go play every once in a while? I mean, what's wrong with that?
I mean, I think when we get back to normal as just a society with all of this going on, I think at the very worst, I can still go to the range. The biggest thing to me was I was lifting and running and basketball and everything to where everything was still real fluid and everything. And then I went through that spurt up until this pandemic where I wasn't working out as much. And then, you know, I got back into it about a month before the coronavirus hit and was going to the gym 6 days a week. Well, I kind of got rid of the shoulder that wouldn't work right, and I couldn't swing. My backswing could only go a certain way when we were at that appearance. And I, in the backyard, I was swinging the club going, this feels good again, and I really want to get back out there. But it's just tough with a newborn and a 4-year-old that's on the go, and your wife has got things going on. So I think when it settles down, I'm at least going to go to the range again.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Well, and I keep thinking, you and I and Nick kept saying, we're going to go. We're going to go play. And we've got friends at Galveston Country Club that are big listeners to the show that keep inviting us to go down there. And that's quite a drive, but we have that as an option. But I'm like, we should at some point go out for the day and just swing them.
I would love that more than anything. I think we would have an absolute blast doing that. So, yeah, for sure. Until it got competitive, because you know the three of us.
Oh, there's no doubt, yeah.
And which doesn't make sense because I'm not good and I would still be competitive with you. And Nick, too. It would go poorly for us, but I think in the end of the day, the three of us would have some fun doing it. We need to do that. Maybe we could do that and do this. Since three of us, we should do a foursome and auction off the fourth spot to a listener and the money goes to charity.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to say AJ. Yeah, sure.
No,
I
think that would be great. No.
I think Josh Rapp would probably want to outbid everybody.
Well, yeah, but you know, like they're doing the poker tournament and they're raising a ton of money. I think $2,200 this weekend for charity. Maybe we do that. Maybe we decide, you know what, and Joel, don't let Lisa know, but it's a good way for you just to get out and go play golf. But it's a way we could do cool for you know, whatever whether it's, you know, $100 or $500 or a grand, whatever we end up making, we'll give it to a charity. I think that would be cool.
And I think Josh Rapp's going to outbid everybody. I think it'd be great. I think we should do it. Something to consider when we get back to normal, to have some fun, put that on the list of things we need to do. With that, what we need to do is get to a break. Hour number 2 is in the books. That means we got 60 minutes on the clock and an hour left of the show. Don't go anywhere. The final segment, or at least segments of the show, the final hour of The Usual Suspects, coming up next, ESPN 97.5.
Sam Windsor with the Houston Sabercats here. Even when I'm down under, I'm listening to ESPN 97.5 on the app. You can stream the boys from anywhere. Mate,